Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We are joined this morning by Dr. Tal Mimran. He's an associate professor at the Tzfat Academy Academic College, the academic coordinator of the International Law Forum of the University of at Hebrew University. A very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Glad to be with you.
It's great to chat to you. So what we wanted to talk about was the difficulties and the challenges and the chances of success of the hostage families of any interested party in suing an organization that is tied to the United Nations like UNRWA. Is there precedent for this?
So first and foremost, the issue of UN immunity is one of the most complex one in international law, as it is a multi-layered question.
Right.
We have a first pillar of the UN Charter. We have a second pillar of general treaties which deal with immunity for international organizations and the UN in particular. And we have a third layer, which is a particular or bilateral agreements between specific states and specific organizations. Now, UNRWA is a UN agency, and as such, one can claim that it has immunity under the UN Charter and the general treaties. But if we will look at the specific treaty between Israel and the UN, which enabled the entry of UNRWA into territories controlled by Israel in 1967, we will see that the picture is a bit complex, and it is unsure if the UN and its employees can enjoy immunity under this agreement, especially for international crimes. Now, you asked about precedents. So we had some examples of people who try to sue UN agencies for their either negligence or failure to act, for example, in Srebrenica and in Africa, more specifically in Congo. But this is quite a unique case in which the plaintiffs are actually alleging that there was direct participation of the UN agency in the commission of international crimes. So in certain ways, it is unprecedented.
Right.
And in terms of chances, I hate to say it, but I think they are slim. I don't see this this process going forward. And even if it will go forward and there will be a resolution against the UN, I believe that the negotiation will begin and some kind of a specific agreement will be reached. And part of the agreement will be will include a removal of the lawsuit, which is something that was done in the past by the UN.
Right. In this case, we do seem to have incidents of UNRWA personnel actively involved in October the 7th, actively involved in either keeping hostages or perhaps allowing their facilities to be used. Would that be equivalent to some of the examples that you've given us?
Yes. So first, we discuss separately facilities and individuals.
Okay.
So in terms of facilities, when facilities are misused, then the immunity which the facility enjoys is removed so long as the violation takes place. This is the view of Israel. But as I mentioned earlier, the UN believes that it enjoys absolute immunity. In the view of the UN, any issue with UN employees should be resolved within the UN, namely through institutional penal sanctions. Now, even if we would accept this assertion, arguendo, I didn't see any significant steps being taken in relation to the involvement on October 7. And the contrary is actually the correct. It seems that the UN is on its back heels defending in every way UNRWA and its role in the Gaza Strip. Now, we must recall that at the end of the day, with all due respect to the UN as the most important international organization, no doubt, it is still an international organization. And in order for it to operate in a territory of a state, it needs to accept the consent of that state. Now, when it comes to Gaza, so who is the state that can give consent in relation to this territory? So we have actually another complication when it comes to the activities of the UN in Gaza. And in terms of immunity, which Israel may have provided or did not provide the UN, this immunity does not apply to the Gaza Strip because Israel did not control the Gaza Strip in the last 20 years. So legally wise, there is actually quite a strong case for the plaintiffs.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of policy considerations and the politics, interstate politics in between states themselves and in between states and international organizations, I think that it will come in the way of justice to be granted in this proceeding.
Do you think it would have gone a different way had the United mm-hmm. Nations and an organization like UNRWA taken responsibility mm-hmm. and acknowledged the extent of A, the involvement, and B, the corruption or rot within UNRWA?
Absolutely. And in fact, it is the legal obligation of the UN. We are in a point of time where we are closing a historic circle, because back in 1950, there was an advisory opinion by the International Court of Justice, which dealt with the question of legal responsibilities and ability to enjoy rights for the UN. And the source of this case was the assassination of Count Bernadotte, which was sent to Israel as part of a UN mission. And the specific question was, should Israel compensate the UN for the fact that an Israeli assassinated a UN, a member of a UN mission? So 8 years, fast forward 80 years, and we are actually in the opposite situation, in which we have a UN employee which killed an Israeli citizen, but the UN does not grant what it asks from others. So this is just another indication of the hypocrisy of international organizations, and part of the reason that there is a significant erosion in the trust and legitimacy of such organizations, because you cannot demand something from others which you don't demand from yourself. That is the most basic issue when it comes to legitimacy of law.
What about some an organization like the Red Cross, who might mm-hmm. not have been actively involved with October the 7th, but certainly didn't fulfill its mandate in terms of the hostages?
So the ICRC can always claim that Hamas did not cooperate with it. And as Hamas is not a member state of the UN, the ICRC actually has a good excuse in this regard, because it is hard to deal with terror organizations. They are unpredicted. There is no bilateral relations which dictate the type of relationships between the ICRC and that entity. And as such, it is quite a complicated situation. At the same time, we must not forget that the biggest failure of the ICRC was also related to Israel or to the Jewish people during the Holocaust. So, in fact, the very same Count Bernadotte that was assassinated in Israel, mm-hmm. he was assassinated because people in Israel remembered that during the Holocaust, he was sent to negotiate with a German commander of a prison camp. And he negotiated the release of Swedish prisoners,
mm-hmm.
but he told the prison camp, well, with relation to the Jews, you can do whatever you want, because we think the same in relation to them. Once again, we are mm-hmm. seeing a historical connection between all of the issues which are of relevance to our case. And we are seeing a repeating pattern,
of course.
A pattern in which either Jewish people or the state of Israel are being mistreated and discriminated when compared with other instances, and specifically instances in which the UN stood in the shoes of Israel.
Dr. Tal Mimran is an associate professor at the Sfat Academic College. He joined us this morning to talk about the success rate and the possibility of suing and perhaps winning even against cases against organizations such as UNRWA. And his view is one that that there isn't a great chance of success, probably that it's still worth doing just to hold them accountable.